This is Alan Ramsey interviewing Vesta Buteau on Friday, February 8th, 2008 in Hibbard 705. And I guess the first question would be, when did you go to college, or did you go to college? And were you interested in sports at all then, or no?
Well, yes. I went to college. Now, this will really date me, during World War II.
Okay.
And at that time, there was no such thing as girls' athletics, but I took a lot of physical education courses because I enjoyed them. And I had a double major in chemistry and biology, but I didn't use those very much. Then when I got to teaching, I went into physical education, and I got a minor at Eau Claire here, and then I went into Minnesota and got a master's and did my degree there. And I have credits beyond the master's, but not a PhD.
Okay. And you, so there was very limited opportunities then in college for girls' activities?
Oh, merciful heavens. There were no opportunities whatsoever. We had Phi Ed classes, and of course at that time, and for years later, it was segregated, the women and the men. The women had one, and the men had another. There was never the twain shall meet. And there were no activities. And, of course, at the time that I was going to college, we were basically studying so that we could get out of class, hurry up and graduate and take a man's place in a working position or something so that he could go to war. So there was not all that much concentration in at that time on extracurricular activities, either for the men or the women. They had football and they had basketball, but limited because there were few men on campuses at that time.
What sort of thing did you do during the war? Were you in college the whole war or out of college?
I started my college in 1942. And I finished in 1945, which was the end of the war. So I went to school during the war, and when I started teaching, the men were beginning to return to the schools, to their high schools. Yeah.
So, and this sort of goes along with college at that time. Was there ever a chapter of like the Women's Recreation Association that you were involved with, or like a Girls Athletic Association?
I think there must have been, because I can remember the first school that I taught in, I organized a GAA, Girls Athletic Association, which is just, we were allowed to go into the gym at certain times and just play basketball or something, and it was nothing organized, but I think there was a WREA, or WRA, Wisconsin, or Women's Recreation Activities in the college, but it wasn't stressed that much. We were supposed to spend more time studying and getting our credits and getting out of college to take a man's place. But I know that GAAs were sometimes the only way that girls could get into the gyms at all.
Okay, so they were very restrictive on gym access then?
It just wasn't available, yes.
Okay.
We would get it when the men were finished, if the men were finished, and if they did not need it, then the women might get a chance. But in order to do that, we had to have a group of us, so that was the GAA did
okay.
that.
Was there other activities that you recollect that the GAA did besides besides like using the gym?
We had outside activities too, but as far as the physical activities go, I think it was mainly basketball and volleyball, because I don't remember doing field work, field activities. But it's basically basketball and volleyball when we had a chance to get into the gyms. Yeah.
Okay. So where did you start right after college then, as far as like work, as a job? Did you start here or did you start somewhere else?
Oh. My first teaching job was in a place called Draper, which is up in northern Wisconsin in Sawyer County. And there were two teachers in the high school. There were five students in the senior class. And with my chemistry and biology background, I was a woman. Therefore, I taught English. I had a minor in English. I taught typing because I could type. I taught history. I taught civics. And I taught Phi-Ed because I liked activities. But the science and math was taught by a man, even though I had the degree in it.
And he's just because he was a man? Or
basically, yes. Basically, yes.
So but you taught a wide array of...
Yes, I did. And in those days, now, you would be very interested to know my degree, my certification that I have, you know, you have to have a license. My certification says I am qualified to teach. Mm-hmm. I could teach anything from here to there. In this broad I could teach anything. Okay. But that was a certification that was given out in those days. They did not specify areas. Okay. You were just certified to teach.
Was that the same for males then as well?
Yes, that was the certification to teach, yes.
Okay. So during that time, you ran pretty much that high school's physical education. Did you just work with the females of that?
Oh, yes. Oh, my, yes. Oh, yes. Okay. And there weren't very many in a school that size, but we did have some. We got to play some basketball. And I don't know what else we did. I think we played softball in the spring of the year.
So
it wasn't actually a program. It was just the case that when there was an empty facility, I grabbed it on for the GAA so that we could have some time there.
So the GAA was more prevalent in both high school or college?
I don't think. In college, it was the WRA, the Wisconsin Recreation Association, and this other was Girls Athletic Association. So I don't know, the WRA, Women's Recreation Association is what the WRA was. So that when you got into college, you became the one.
Okay.
When you're in the high school, it was the girls.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
How long were you at Draper then?
1 year.
1 year, and then did you?
I taught in Hayward for a while.
Okay.
Then I went to Cadott. I married a farmer there, and I stayed in Cadott. And then my next experience was in Cornell. And I went to Cornell because they needed a girls' Phi-Ed teacher. And I had experience in teaching, even though I didn't have credits in it. And so I taught in Cornell. At the same time, I was working on a minor in physical education here in Eau Claire. And at that time, there was only a men's minor. So, in the summertime, when I would be going to school, I would take the men's classes in order to get myself certified.
So you were able to get into the men's minor. How did that exactly?
Well, that was very interesting. I don't know. Aide Olson was the chairman,
okay.
And he knew me because he came up to Cornell oftentimes. And it was just a case that I had to get these credits, and
were you in the same courses then as the men? Was
yeah.
it okay?
Yeah.
And what type of courses?
Well, there was one other lady and I were in this summer school class, and we learned all of the sports, men's sports, and we played the men's sports. And very, very, only people who have been in physical education will understand what I say when I say this, that when it came to basketball, and Aide Olson says, now they always had one woman on one side and one on the other, so each team had the same problems. one woman and a man, a woman. So it wasn't two women over here and all of them, you know, one apiece. And so when it came to basketball, Ade Olson says, all right, we're going to play a game now. We're going to play shirts and skins. I said, I'm a shirt. Now, do you understand that?
Yes. And what was
so this? It ended up with the shirts putting on pinnies. Now, you know what a pinny
yep.
is?
Yes,
okay. So one team had to wear a pinafore because there was a girl on that team.
So you worked out with the pennies then. That was
yeah.
That was the solution to that.
Yes.
And you played the full male rules then?
Yes.
I take it?
Yes.
Not like other times where it's more of a women's structure.
No, when we went back to our schools, we of course had to teach the girls rules. But in school here, in order to get our degree, this other gal and I, we were working on a minor. We had to, we did everything that the men did. We didn't come up with their qualifications in some things because we weren't strong enough or didn't have the experience in it. But we were allowed to do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what type of rules? What was the typical rule set for girls' high school basketball at the time?
Oh. At the time when I was first started teaching in Cornell, in the United States there was one state that had a good girls' basketball program, and that was the state of Iowa. Because the girls were not allowed to go across the center line. You had three guards up here and three forwards down there. And they had three guards against there and their forwards up here. And you were not allowed to go across the center line. So the guards never learned to shoot. And the forwards really never learned to guard because you were just doing one thing and not both of them. Well, then they added a running forward. Sometimes if your team was that you were the guard and you got the ball down here, you could pass it to one of your teammates who was at the line, and that person would be allowed to dribble across because they could become the running forward. So that you one person on a team could cross the line, and the rest of you stayed out behind that line.
Okay. And was there any organized competition? Was this just teaching girls in high school?
Oh yes, there was never any competition in between schools. You've got to be kidding at that time of the nation. There was no such thing as girls' sports, girls' athletics. There was no competition between schools and with girls. No. It was all a class activities. Yeah.
Okay. So, did you ever, at the high school level, I've done a little bit of reading on different variations with women's sport,
mm-hmm.
and my curiosity lies somewhat, too, with the idea of was there ever, on the high school level, like a college level, the idea of play days or sports days?
Yes. And that was the only time that we would have a chance to go someplace else and play. But we would... Oh, maybe take a team. We're going to have a sports day, and there might be six teams over here, and they kind of, but it was all girls against girls. It was a sports day for the girls, it wasn't the case that you had a team from your school. It's just that each class might have a team. Okay, all right, we're going to take. I've got five classes. All right, now in this class, you pick up a team, and then we'll go over to sports day.
Okay, so
nothing organized.
So
no.
What was a typical sports day like at the time?
Oh, golly, let me think. They had lots of different activities. And it was in the spring of the year. You would have there'd be some track and field. There would be probably, depending upon the size of the school that was doing the entertaining, oftentimes it was outdoor volleyball and then indoor basketball. And track and field. There might be some track and field. But it was all just girls. There were no, this was no co-educational thing. It was just a play day for girls.
And no men ever attended those things?
I'm not saying they didn't attend, but they did not participate. They might come and root for their girlfriends and whatnot. Okay. You know, I don't doubt that. But they were non-participants. They were just the rooters.
Strictly girls.
Correct. Yes. And at the same, at different times, they had play days for boys too. And this oftentimes involved classes as opposed to the teams.
Okay.
The team a team wouldn't go to a play day as a team. They might have one of the forward of this one and a guard, you know, they in various teams, but they did not go to represent a school. They were just there to have fun.
Okay, so at a play day or sports day, then, were you kept in the same, like, you brought all the students, were you kept in the same school, or were you distributed?
Oh, well, I would, you know, well. Well, let's say track and field. We had three or four people. They'd go over there. And as for the team sports, I'm thinking that you played as your groups that came.
Okay.
Jeepers cats. Now, let me think again. There's a possibility, and I think I recall this. I don't know that it happened every time, that when you'd come, you'd get a ticket or something, and maybe it was a color. So all the blacks with the black hair and all the yellows are over there, and the reds are here and the greens are there, and you might participate that way. And I have a hunch that was done more often than as a team, because girls didn't have teams.
Okay.
They would go in and intermingle and whatnot. Yeah.
So how long, sort of moving away from the sports day, how long did it take you to complete the minor doing it by the summer? Was it just the length of the summer? Or?
Oh, no, it took me about four summers, I guess it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you were teaching high school?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And when did you... what first interested you just in the idea of physical education?
Oh, I always, well, I'll tell you what, I had three brothers, an older one and two younger ones. And in order to keep up with them, I was a tomboy. And I would much rather have gone out and played football with a bunch of boys out there than sitting with the girls playing jacks, if you know what jacks are. Yeah. So I always enjoyed activities and sports.
When did you begin to get more active, sort of at the college?
Well, I got into teaching Phi-Ed simply because a school needed a Phi-Ed teacher in Cornell. I lived in Cadott. The superintendent of Cornell was a good friend of the superintendent in Cadott. And the man in Cadott says, well, you know, Vesta's out here, and maybe she'd come and teach your Phi-Ed. So that's how I got started teaching Phi-Ed. I had no credits in it, but I was very active in it. And so at that time, there were so few teachers available that I got special certification on the condition that I would pick up a minor within X number of years, and I did that.
Okay. And after you received the minor, did you stay at Cornell?
Yes, I stayed at Cornell quite a while, but you are not allowed to continue teaching on a minor. Within so many years, you have to get at least a major or a master. Well, I had already had two majors, and I didn't feel that I needed to have another one. And I was older, and I thought about going to Madison. I thought about going to La Crosse to get a Phi-Ed major. And I was going to work on the master's program. And then I tried Minnesota. And Minnesota, at Wisconsin and La Crosse, I would have to have competed and picked up a number of undergraduate credits before I could start a graduate program. By that time, I said, I'm too old and I'm two kids too far. So I went to Minnesota, and they accepted my superintendent's recommendation on my teaching ability, that I just had to take one course that was kind of covered the waterfront in physical education activities that I had already taught, and in lieu of having to go do those. So then I went to Minnesota, and that's where I did my graduate work, because they accepted me as such. I didn't have to go and start proving myself running up and down the field like with a bunch of 18-year-olds.
And what year did you pursue the master's?
I got my master's in 1964.
Okay.
That was the year, I guess, or maybe I got in 62. I'm not sure. One of those two. I think I must have gotten it in 62 because I think I came to the university in 64.
Okay.
And the reason I could come to teach at the university was because I had a master's degree. And I told them when I came, I said, I'll be very happy to continue my education, I want you to know I'm not going to be heading toward a doctorate degree. First of all, I'm too old, got too many kids. I got my couple kids. And by the time I could make up what I had lost with my degree, and I'd have to take a year of residency, I said it financially and whatnot wouldn't be worth it. But they said that's all right, as long as I was a good teacher. So they took the word of my superintendents and whatnot that I was a good teacher, so here I am.
Okay. So you started here roughly in 1964?
I think it was 64, think it was. I'm not sure.
And what did you teach at that time?
Well, at that time, I taught dance. The chairman of the department was away getting her doctor's degree, and I had taken the dance course from her, and this was a professional course for the professional students. And so I taught that, and then I was the elementary, because there was a campus school here, and I taught the elementary children. Four, five, and six, I think I taught the upper elementaries here for a number of years. And then when the camp school was closing down, then I went straight to college.
Did you teach just girls and women, or
at that time, we managed to get ourselves a women's major. We worked hard. And the men wanted a degree. And so the only way they could get it sometimes was to take a women's major course. So it's kind of, reversing itself. The women had to take in order to get a minor, we had to take the men's courses, and now the men are, and that was nuts, but anyhow, that's the way it was. And eventually, it became a physical education major instead of it was a PE major women. Yeah,
Who was the chairman of the department?
Ade Olson.
Okay.
Ade Olson was the chair, and then when he retired, he stayed in the department, but he retired as chair, and then Ida Hinz took over.
Okay. And was there any reason? Did Ida have sort of senior credentials?
Well, absolutely, yeah. She had her, by that time, she had her doctor's degree, and at one time, she and Ade Olson were the full faculty of the Phi Ed department, and then as more people came, they got more people into the faculty, but definitely, she had seniority.
Okay.
And then she went to get her, she got her doctorate degree, so she was really up as well as seniority.
What did a typical day of teaching consist of for you during your time here?
Well, Ade Olson was very good to me. I lived on a farm. He knew that I milked cows every morning. And he knew that there was just no way I could get here for an 8 o'clock class. So I had 9 o'clock classes. They'd start at 9 o'clock. And Ade was so proud of me, he'd go around and introduce me. This lady teaches in my Phi Ed department, and you know what? She milks cows every morning. If you had known Ade Olson, you'd know how typical that was. Well, let's see. I usually had a 9 o'clock class, and then I taught. At that time, there were service classes that we taught also, which was a requirement of the university. You had to have 2 credits of physical education in order to graduate. And so most of our staff were teaching these service courses. And I taught tennis at one time, and I taught I taught fencing. I was the only one that knew fencing, so I taught fencing all the years I was here. And dance classes, ballroom dance and square dancing and folk dancing as service classes, in addition to the one that was the professional course. And then I think I was the only one with any experience in the public school system. So then I began working with student teachers and in the School of Education. And then I supervised student teachers the last few years of my time when I was here.
Okay. What sort of facilities were available to you when you first came here? Was there lots of space or?
There was Zorn Arena. Period. We played badminton in Zorn. And Ken Anderson was the coach, and we had night classes because there was just no other space. I had a volleyball class at night that started at 6 o'clock, and Ken Anderson couldn't get in the gym until 4 o'clock. So from 4 to 6, that's when the men practiced basketball, the varsity men. And at 6 o'clock, I didn't care what he was doing. I went in with my volleyball court. So the only thing we had was that. And then for field, where Phillips is and where the Phillips parking lot is, that was a field, and we used to play soccer, have soccer there. Now this is when I was, it was after, when I was here. I played soccer with Aid Olson in my men's classes, and that was the field out at there. Then they started building, and of course, when I first came, there were no facilities for the faculty, so they put trailers out here, and we had our offices in the trailers that were just parked outside outside of the Zorn Arena, and. There were three of us in a trailer, and then there were about two trailers. And so if you wanted to take a shower or something, you had to go into, there were some main offices that the people that had more seniority had those offices. And there was a shower facility there or something like that. It was very interesting.
Sounds like it.
Well, now, it wasn't only us. The music department also had trailers up a little ways away from ours, but they also had trailers that they were in, some of them, before they built the fine arts.
So was that due to the fact that things had the institution had somewhat outgrown?
Yes, and this was the reason that the outgrowth of the students and whatnot and the trailers were the reason for the new buildings. Because that's when we got McPhee up on the hill, and that's when the Fine Arts Building came in, is because the university was growing. And they had to have some decent space for their staff, too. And some of the odd places that classes were held were real, it was real interesting before they got.
What type of places, anything?
Well, let me think. Our dance class was held in the gym. The dance classes were held in the gym, too, at the times. And that was kind of the basketball is now. The doors are all open and everything. Mm-hmm. Well, in my class of dance that I had that was the professional class, I made everybody learn to in ballroom dance. They had to learn how to lead. They learned how to follow. So there were times when men were following women. And there was one time when I had about four extra men than women. And I made the men dance together. Now today, in this day and age, you don't think much about that. But in that day and age, they were just absolutely horrified. And I said, you'll only have to do it for a while until then you go and you dance with a girl. But you were going to be teaching both parts, therefore you're to learn both parts. So those are some of the interesting things that happened when we were crowded. And you know, you think about that today, they were horrified in those days to see two men dancing together. Didn't bother them about the two women. Two women are accepted. But to have two men, and I said, you know, you learned the most when another man was leading a man, because then you see what it is to follow in ballroom dancing. And I said that was, and they agreed that some of the best learning came when they were trying to follow some other guy that was leading them, doing steps that I was telling them to do. So it was, and today, I don't imagine you would do that today, because that would be kind of bad.
Okay. Was...
this is a lot of stuff you didn't expect to get.
Was there a regularly department meeting discussions
about
anything about women and men's the roles, the what was, you know, what's, you know, men get certain things or
I don't recall. Well, I shouldn't say that. When I came, the men were definitely favored in our area, because there was nothing pushing women's activities. And it wasn't until Title IX came in that said, if you have an activity for a man, you've got to have an equivalent for the girls. And that was when things began to even out, so that the women began to have some activities too. And then we began to have more women's athletics. Was when Title IX came in.
Were you ever involved here at the Eau Claire campus with any of the like Women's Recreation Association things, or?
I was a coach for 1 year because I knew how to fence, and this was the first team at Eau Claire that was co-educational, because men and women could both be on a fencing team.
When was that?
Back in the gay 90s. No, let's see, when was it? It was early 70s, I would say. And we fenced in Minneapolis, and we fenced in Miquon, down in the Milwaukee area. But when you're in these things, you're fencing according to your sex. You don't have men fencing women. But the fencing team could be composed of men and women, because they were not competitive with each other. And they would practice with each other, because women were basically faster, men were basically stronger, and they practiced together, but there was never any competition between the sexes. When they went, the men were fenced, and then the women, wherever the women were, they were fencing other places.
And that was the separation was, that was a conference or competition rule that?
No, it was never a conference. These were private clubs, because there was no fencing team. Madison has one, but I don't think there's any other place that does competitive fencing as a team. These were all organizations that maybe they came over from France or someplace, and they just had this group, and you know, and when they found out about that I had some, that I was teaching fencing here, and did I want some, would I be interested in having some of my kids come over? And I go, oh, sure. And that's how we got into that. And I want you to know that during the years when my people were going out fencing, they got into electrical fencing. Well, I then got electrical equipment, which means you had to have a vest and you had to have an electrical foil. And so they were qualified in, as far as the equipment went. We never did very much of it. And then the electrical stuff was used maybe 2 different years is all.
What is electrical fencing? I'm not quite up on.
Okay, you have a vest that's hooked on to a cord, and back there there's it's electrical and it's hooked on to the scorekeeper.
Okay.
And your foil, when you touch this vest like this, the light will blink.
Okay.
And indicate that there was a touch. And if it's touched against you, the light over on this side of the scorekeepers would ring.
Okay, that's interesting for.
And one time somebody came to me and wanted to know if I knew about fencing equipment long after I'd retired. I said, well, I know where there is some good stuff. Brought it to the university, they had just thrown it away. Because there was no one here that knew fencing, and it was taking up a bunch of room. The masks, you know, are this big, and I had classes of 30, and the jackets, and all that, you know. And the university policy was you couldn't give them away, and neither could you sell them. So therefore, you have to throw them away. Okay, that's.
What challenges, if any, did you face as a coach here? Was there a point where you faced a really uphill battle or challenge, or were things pretty
much? As I said, I was not a coach.
Okay.
And the only reason that my people went fencing is because I knew how to fence. Mm-hmm. But I was not a fencing coach either. I just was a fencing teacher that took these kids down someplace, and when they got into these we never did very well, because I did not know that much about fencing, and my kids didn't really care, because these were the only places they'd have a chance. There was no reason for them to really perfect their skills, because there would be no place they could use them, but they sure had fun fencing. So it was just a case that I had no challenge as a coach, because I wasn't a coach.
Okay. So, sort of to rephrase that, was there any challenges then as like a physical education teacher, as far as like you needed equipment, well, we can't do that, or you wanted access to a facility? Mm-hmm. And
equipment is always a challenge. Because equipment wears out. No matter how good a care you take of it, age will set in for basketballs or volleyballs, and records. Of course, nowadays you don't use records like we did in those days for dancing and things like that. So you had to use what you had, try to get some more, and usually I don't find that it was very difficult if you had common sense in what you were ordering and asking for, and didn't try to go way out and get something that's. I thought that electrical stuff was pretty good. But as far as getting things, especially at the university level, I didn't find that too hard. And at the high school level, I didn't find it hard at all, because it was a new program. You know, they were just beginning to have to act to require physical education in the high schools, and they had to get equipment for it. And I didn't have much problems at that time getting equipment or anything.
Did you have any, and I think you touched on a little bit, but any challenge of getting, like, say, Zorn Arena, or did you just you know, this is the time that I've been allotted. And
that was it. You bet it was a challenge, because it didn't make any difference to me what Ken Anderson said. I'm not finished. I says, I don't care. If you can play basketball around my volleyball nets, go ahead, or my badminton courts. Yes, there was a challenge there, because coaches of the teams are very, very protective, and perhaps rightly so. But and there was very little give. But this is my job too, and my class was to meet at 6 o'clock. And if we had waited for him to get through with what he wanted to do, it would have been 7 or 7:30, and the class was a 1 hour class. So there were challenges that way, yes. But actually, as far as a men versus women thing, I think I didn't get in on that because I wasn't a coach.
Was there ever any sort of going on that men-women thing? And you've talked about it some. Was there ever any disputes between colleagues of the physical education department, or were you a good group and were able to work through things?
I think we did pretty well, because the coaches were also teachers at that time. Now, I don't know about now. I know that in being hired, their major portion of their contract, the major portion was teaching. And so at that time, when Title IX first came in and there began to be women coaches and all this sort of thing, but we were all just one department. And we were the Phi Ed and Athletics Department, but basically it was Phi Ed, and the head of it was the chairman of the department. Then there was the director of athletics that handled the athletic problems, but when it came time to having a staff meeting, all of them were included.
Okay, so there was a distinct difference athletic-wise. They met, but as a physical education department, due to their teaching, you all came together for meetings.
The ones that were just Phi Ed teachers didn't go over there, didn't go to any of their meetings. But they were to come to all of ours, because they were all physical education teachers too. They all had some class within the physical education department, in addition to their coaching assignment, yeah.
Okay. So, when sort of shifting a little bit forward, at what point did Title IX really become big on the campus here? Was there a precursor in the department that you knew this is coming and
yeah.
we have definite things coming up that we need to take a look at, or, you know,
Maybe Marilyn Skrifseth could tell you more about the timing, but there was a time when, all right, if the men wanted something, what are you going to give the women? And if the women hadn't stuck up for it, they wouldn't have gotten it. Excuse me. And there were some very hard feelings there, because the men couldn't have a particular program if the women couldn't have an equal one. Not necessarily the same thing, but an equal program. And that was hard. It was hard for the men to accept, because they had been used to being the top dogs. And this was something that was brand new, and it took a while. And, of course, I think the women... At that time, Judy Crookman was the girls athletic director, and who was the men? Maybe Steve Kurth, I don't know. But the women had to be very adamant, and it almost seemed as if they were mad, in order to get some kind of equal compensation type thing. Now, this is all, I'm looking from the outside. I'm not seeing it because I was not involved in any of these meetings, but I could hear, you know, I go to the lounge and they talk and I hear these things. And it was very difficult. And you can imagine after 50 years of being dominant, that of the dominant men's sports, only men's sports, to all of a sudden have to start giving was a something that's a brand new idea. And I, it was difficult to start out with, I think. But like I say, I'm on the outside looking in on that. I was not involved in that.
So as an outsider, or as well as being a physical education, were you still a physical education teacher at the time of Title IX's passage? Or okay, and so as an outsider, what was the, do you recollect what a typical campus response in general was?
Well, then we began to get mixed classes. It was always before a women's class and a man's class. And now it was just a phys ed class. And it was basketball, it was basically segregated, but now tennis and volleyball and some of these other sports became coeducational. And now I don't know if they even have any phys ed program now, a requirement on the campus. But then, now, my fencing started out to be women. Yeah. And then, when the men began, you know, these fencing classes filled like mad, because it's fascinating. It's something different. And so then we had to order bigger equipment and stuff like that. So, and more equipment probably because it was going to be coeducational, but Title IX is what integrated the phys ed classes.
So before that there was definite splits, and
yes,
and
there was a women's class and there were men's classes.
And that was listed as such in the course, like the course catalog listed as such.
Well,
do you know, or?
Yeah. It was a phys ed M.
Okay.
Phys ed W. But as for the fight, right. They were definitely, and now of course it's just Phi Ed 101, you know. Yeah.
Okay, and so was there a general, like, if you recollect, like a general campus feeling, you know, media wise or even.
No.
Just in general, or
no.
It was more.
I think that Title I came in just like this, not like this.
Okay.
It came in, and there were some, you know, there were hard feelings on both sides here, but it didn't go across the campus. It just sort of worked here, and pretty soon there were some girls that are having their girls' sports, and there are some boys over here, and oh, the boys are going to come and they yell for the girls' volleyball team and things like that, you know, because there were those teams now. I don't recall that there was a lot of animosity campus-wise. There was problems within the staff because the women wanted it and the men had it. And if the men wanted another program, all right, that's fine with us, but give us one too that's comparable. And you got some of the, now I know on the high school level now, when I was on a school board, when we had high school wrestling, and we had two girls that wanted to be on the wrestling team. And they were on it, because there was nothing that the school board could do to prevent it. And I said to the parents of these girls, I said, do you really want them to go competing against another school? Well, the girls want to. Our hands were tied. I don't recall anything like that at the university level. The men's basic men's activities like wrestling, I don't recall ever having any woman wanting to be in a college wrestler. But you got that in the high schools. Right now, they have a wrestling program in my town, and anyone from 4 years old up can be in it. And you should see some of those little girls, I'll tell you. But I don't know what happens when they get up higher. And the problem that I had when I was on the board was this was a high school junior who had been a basketball star for freshman and sophomore year, and now she wanted to go wrestle. And we could not talk her out of it, and what's more, we were not allowed to talk to her about it. And when we talked to the parents, it wasn't to be the main topic. We were just visiting with parents, and you know, you were not to go to them and say, listen, your girl shouldn't do it. You say, oh, about the weather, and about the prom, and about this, that, and the other thing, and then once in a while you'll bring up the little girl that should not be wrestling. And I said to the board, I said, how can you ask a boy to wrestle a girl? I can see a girl could wrestle a boy, perhaps. But when I've seen some of these moves that are done, how can you ask that boy to do that sort of thing on a girl? And you know what? The coaches had awful time, because what boy wants to do that? And I don't know, maybe there's still girls on those wrestling teams, but I said it's putting the coach and the boy at a very big disadvantage. I was very much opposed to it, but I had to keep my mouth shut, because Title IX said that if they wanted to and there was no program comparable, they could have it.
When were you on the board, and when did this sort of debate begin to take place?
Okay, I was on the school board much of the time that I was teaching here. I was on a school board for 21 years.
Where were you?
In Cadott.
In Cadott.
Yeah, and because I was up here teaching, it was not a conflict of interest, mm-hmm. because I wasn't on the high school level. Okay. And I went through Title IX. Some of its problems as a school board member, and having to try to handle it on the high school level, I think it was even more difficult, because you were treading on parents. At the university level, the parents weren't so much involved as in it. It was trying to get the girls to have some activities too, but at the high school level, you get the parents in there.
What was there any program that you remember? I mean, being that you were on the outside, not necessarily in the discussions, but as being on the outside, that all of a sudden Title IX sort of came in, as you said, sort of slow, that a women's program sort of emerged, or
when Title IX came in, believe me, it emerged. On the campus, it was kind of like this, but you know, just joining like that. But it came in, and after that, the women said, "Now look." We want a program for this, and you have this program, all right? You have this program, and we want this program. And if you want this program, and we can't have one, then you can't have that. And you know, the thing was that in some cases, now I'm thinking back about high school and whatnot, and maybe even would come to college, volleyball was a women's sport. What would keep men out of being on the volleyball team?
Exactly.
What's fair for the cat, you know?
Yeah.
And
right.
And if you had men on a women's volleyball team, they're so strong, and you know, I don't think that ever happened, but I could see that it might have. And I can see, I remember that there were times when there were, the men were wondering, well, why can't they be on the volleyball team? Because the men don't have a volleyball team. The women had gymnastics, the men had gymnastics. The women had track and field, or had field hockey, and the men had football. They all had, and the intercoeducational one, of course, was track and field. Because that was men and women working at the same time. But the women had a coach, and the men had a coach. But they were out there all working together.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, was there any, like you said, that like they wanted the same program or something similar to it, whether it be equal or not, you know, it, some sort of program. Was there one that all of a sudden this hit, and one that just shot up to the forefront that as women we need this sport or this program that you remember?
I don't remember that. I don't remember that. We didn't have a women's basketball team here at first, I don't think. Yes, we did too. Yes, we did. Right at the beginning of Title IX, Sandra Schumacher was the coach. But I just don't remember, because, like I say, had I been involved in it and worked with it, I could give you some more answers. But my answer is basically Title IX, as I was involved in a high school area, as a school board member, and here I was education and FIAD, and that was it. So maybe I'm not helping you very much.
No, I'm just curious if there's more of the the outside perspective, like all of a sudden students say, you know, hey, we need, you know, something that you maybe picked up on.
I do remember, though, that when Title IX came out, that there were a lot of meetings that were held trying to figure out how we could equate things now. And the big problem, I think, now this is just budgetary. There's no program that's more expensive than the football program because of the uniforms and whatnot.
Yep.
And I don't know if there was an equality. I don't see how there could have been any equality in finances. And at that time, the men's basketball program went further and did more things than the women's. But now that could be, I could see that could be compensation here. But when it comes to a program like football, I don't know. But I'm thinking that's a more expensive program when you think of the equipment as well as the numbers that you have in it. And I can't think of anything that would be comparable on the women's side. You say field hockey, well, that's what's that? That's a bunch of sticks and a ball, you know? Yeah.
Okay. Was there any departmental review for the physical education department on how they were going to work with Title IX? I know in some of my research, it was sort of not known about athletics, because when the original law came out, it was more of a academics, and once the education department sort of set the regulations, and there was a realization about the athletic portion. I was just curious if there's any, we need to review the if you were involved in that, if you're still outside that.
You know, I don't, you said that the education department sort of took it over. I don't remember that they did a thing. As it affected our department.
Mm-hmm.
What the heck would they have done?
Well, to clarify, the U.S. Department of Education.
Oh, the U.S. Department.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I apologize.
I thought you meant, I was thinking about the Education Department here. What could they do? They didn't do anything.
I'm sorry about that. I should have been more specific.
They thought they had it done when they said equality. Mm-hmm. But the definition of equality is very broad, and they did a lot of revamping, and I think that each school had to do their own adjusting depending on their own situations. But like I said, I didn't notice that so much.
Okay.
Because I just noticed it within my own department as I listened in on things and whatnot.
Okay, so there was no big need in the department for revamp? Did it run smoothly transitioning to this idea of we go from the separate men's and women's physical education to now more just the physical education 101 sort of thing?
Well, when we were a physical education department, so when we would have staff meetings, it would be all the men and women together. Mm-hmm. But the courses that were offered were the ones that were segregated, not the department itself. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a men's department and a women's department. We had a physical education department. But we had a men's major, or a men's minor, and we had a women's major, and we almost got a health minor in here, but it didn't work out. But the department was a department as a whole.
Okay. So as a whole, did you discuss Title IX within the staff meeting structure, or was there a way that you were working with curriculum on that?
No. Yeah. There might have been. I can't recall that was it. I don't recall that, because I think when Title IX came in, the new university booklet went out with fencing 101.
Okay.
Basketball 102 or whatever
okay.
it is.
So no.
And I think at that time, when they took it out of the book as segregated, I think it was done. But now that's just what I'm mm-hmm. thinking, because I don't recall that because I was here for several years when it was segregated, and all of a sudden it isn't.
Okay.
And I didn't see any problem in that part.
Okay.
Getting it segregated, yeah, the classes.
Okay. So in reality, there was no, like you had mentioned before, as far as the outsider, sort of the smooth transition. No,
I think so.
No huge, well, I'm not, you know, sort of the classic, I'm not going to do that, no way. And
yeah, no.
Okay.
I don't recall that happened.
Okay.
No.
There
were no confrontations about classes and things like that. There might have been when you had the athletic departments, but as far as the Department of Physical Education, I don't recall that there was any problem.
Okay. And at the time of Title IX, was Ida still
yes.
still a chair?
Ida was the chair.
Okay. Was
I think A. Dolson would have turned over in his grave.
any specific reason?
No, he was just a man's man.
Okay. Was there any, and this might not be within, because of the outsider and the more of the physical education, was there any sort of person that you remember put in charge of Title IX on the campus?
Yeah, I think that the director of athletics
okay.
was the one. And I think at that time it was Judy Crookman. And I think that all of Title IX came up here. Mm-hmm. I say up here, up at McPhee. I don't think that Title IX affected the university system whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
except our departments. What difference, you know, how did it, there weren't any women's English classes.
True.
I think that Title IX was just something that they heard about in the FIAD department, just affecting the FIAD people and the coaches. And basically that's true. Because I just don't, you know, I can't see that it would affect anything else on the campus.
Okay.
Because you couldn't just have women flutists and flowers or something.
Yeah, right. So, okay, so pretty smooth transition, as you said. And
campus-wise,
campus-wise,
I think so, yeah.
And you've sort of outside my realm even, but still interesting, the high school, where it's a little bit more due to the parent structuring of it, a little bit
yeah.
more. Okay. I guess unless there's something else that I'm missing that you'd like to share with me, I don't have anything, any other sort of questions.
Well, I don't know. I think I've gone off the topic oftentimes, mm-hmm. but I don't think so, because when I became a student teacher, I worked with student teachers. By that time, it was already co-ed classes, and you'd have there would be men teachers and there would be women teachers, and they were very interesting. I was a supervisor, and when I'd have a man student teacher, it was interesting to try to talk to them. Where would I go? I couldn't go in the locker room. Mm-hmm. And so I got to the point where when I would get somebody of that sex, of the a boy, to go in and see if the locker room was clear and see if I could talk to the teacher. But that has nothing to do with Title IX. Mm-hmm. That just has to do with the fact that I was a woman supervisor, he was a man teacher, that he was. I was working with him. And in some of the classes, I have a hunch on a high school level that maybe they didn't have co-ed basketball, I don't believe. I think that the boys had it. Maybe they had co-ed classes and then divide the gym in half and boys here and girls here. I don't really know, remember about that. But it wasn't a Title IX thing. It was just the fact that they played different games. When it came to volleyball, I think they were all on teams together, and everything else was probably. But the only thing I can think about basically was volleyball, or was basketball, and perhaps football. I don't know if football usually wasn't in the FIED curriculum, but I can see that there would be problems if it had been.
When you mentioned the supervising, was that during your career here completely?
Yeah.
You did that from?
I was here about 25 years, and about the last 15 years, I supervised the student teachers because I was the only one in the FIED department that had any definite public school experience. Some of the others came in with 4 years or 5 years. I had 15 years in the public schools, and I was the only one that had that much experience. So now that's why I figured they put me on student teaching, because I could relate to the public school system. And so a part of my load then was in the School of Education, working with student teachers.
Okay. All right.
That has nothing to do with Title IX, but that's just
still
on the side.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. I hope I've helped you out a bit.
Oh, yes. Yes. It's given me sort of an idea of.
Well, you know, there aren't very many people that are that have the experiences that I have. They're too young.
Right.
And who knows? I might be dead tomorrow, and aren't you glad you talked to me today?
Yes.
Because I'm considerably older than mm-hmm. most of them.
Okay.
And is that shut off?
I can shut it off.
Yeah, shut it off.
Yeah.
Because this won't be heavy.